Welcome to Charity Talks. Today I spoke with Dan Hubbard, the founder and director of ForAmanda.org. ForAmanda is a nonprofit foundation that provides emergency financial support to cancer patients. The foundation is named for Amanda Pagans Hubbard, Dan's deceased wife, who with Dan set up the foundation before her passing. The financial challenges that coincide with cancer treatment are often as crippling as the disease, and ForAmanda is dedicated to helping cancer patients and their families with the fiscal difficulties that accompany the diagnosis and treatment. ForAmanda has only existed for a couple of years, but it has already made a huge difference in the lives of those suffering from cancer. So I hope you enjoy learning about the foundation. Today I'm speaking with Dan Hubbard, the founder and director of ForAmanda.org. Dan, thank you for speaking with me today.
Brooke, thank you for having me.
So to start, I know that the founding of ForAmanda is a really powerful story. Can you share this story?
Sure. So in 2021, Amanda wasn't feeling well. She hadn't felt well for a couple weeks. And she woke one day and her skin was yellow and her eyes, and she had abdominal pain. So we went to the hospital and the ER did imaging and they admitted her. And for the next 3 days, they did pretty much every test that they could do. And on the end of the third day, they told us that she had colon cancer that had metastasized to her liver. And that it was stage four and that it was very serious. And we were in Charlotte at the time, and you know, they didn't give us a lot of hope at all. So we made an appointment to go to Duke, and we found, you know, the best oncologist there that works within colon cancer. And the very first visit, we know it was the night before she was to have a port installed, and we noticed there were people sleeping in the parking lot. And you know, we had our dog Moss with us, so I was taking him outside to use the bathroom. And I think the second or third time I did that, one of the gentlemen that was sleeping with his family in a car walked up, and we were just having a conversation, and I learned that all of those patients knew each other. They all did their infusion on the same days, and they all traveled the fairly decent distance to get to their cancer treatment. But that's expensive. You know, having cancer is expensive, even if you have good insurance. So it was better for them to save money on a hotel stay, or, you know, their families, and be able to afford food and the fuel to drive and these sorts of things. And, you know, I went upstairs and I told Amanda that, and it understandably made her very upset, you know, because we were fortunate. We were supposed to have her port installed the next day and start treatment, but they actually found a blockage. So she was actually in the hospital for about a month following surgery. And then we came back about 45, 60 days later, something like that. And we found the same thing, people sleeping in the parking lot. And, you know, the next day she had her port installed and we saw her oncologist, and then we went upstairs for infusion. And we heard a mother tell her children that they couldn't afford to go downstairs to the food court, and that they would eat. If you've not been to an infusion center, they have lots of snacks and drinks and these sorts of things. And the mother explained that, you know, money was an issue and that they were going to have to eat the snacks provided by the infusion center. And it was maybe an hour later, a patient advocate came to visit with Amanda. And I asked the patient advocate, I said, you know, I just wanted to share with you an experience that we had last night and then something that I heard and hear today. And so I did. And she said, well, you know, Dan, that's pretty common. You know, cancer is a very expensive disease. There are a lot of factors. And, you know, she spent some time just talking to Amanda and I about it. And we got to the hotel that night and Amanda said, I don't like that. I want you to do something about it. I want you to create a website and create a nonprofit. And if I'm not here, then that's what I want you to do. And, you know, that was really hard to hear, but it was coming, I think, from the best place it could have. And I think she knew that I would need something to do that mattered. So she didn't like the name. She did not like the name for Amanda. She didn't like that I used the number for and then Amanda. She's very proper. But I said, I'll do everything else that you want, but I want to choose the name because I want to always think about that. And I want to always think about you. So Amanda fought really, really hard and she passed away on January 30th of 2022. And, we were not a nonprofit. We didn't have our IRS designation at that time. But we started to take in donations, immediately following her passing, and we just treated all the money as if we were a 501. Okay. You know, we just behaved that way. We got our 501 status later in 2002, or I'm sorry, 2022. And what we do is take care of the financial needs that come about. And it can be anything. I learned daily that it can be almost anything. Mm. Most of it is rent or mortgage. That's about 67% of the monies that we provide to cancer patients and their families. Following that is utilities and utilities. I don't think it suffices to think of it as just electric and, yeah, you know, that kind of thing. It's phones, right? So a phone bill for a family can be $100, right? So these are some of the things. And then transportation, of course. We pay for vehicle notes, we pay for insurance, we pay to fix windshields. People are driving over 200 miles on average for cancer treatment, and you'd be surprised how many broken windshields there are in a month. So, you know, these are some of the things. Then of course, oil changes. You know, you're driving for an infusion twice a month. You know, that's 800 to 1200 miles on your vehicle. So you're burning through oil changes, tires, brakes, and then food. You know, nutrition is critical for cancer patients. And a lot of the food products, especially protein shakes and these sorts of things, are costly. A protein shake on average is $1.17. That's the national average. Cancer patients need to be consuming 2 to 3 of those a day. A lot of cancer patients will think about that and say, well, that takes food out of my children's mouth and I'm not going to do that. And so they'll cut those corners, and we don't want them to, because good nutrition aids in helping them beat cancer. And then of course, there's the holistic financial piece. We know that cancer patients that have less financial stress tend to have better outcomes. Mm-hmm. We know that if a cancer patient goes into bankruptcy, for instance, they're 3 times as likely to die as a cancer patient that doesn't fund a bankruptcy. So one of the things that we're trying to get better at, and I've not been good at this from the start, but we're getting better at it, is trying to get into contact with hospital systems, with social services folks, and let them know, hey, if you think a patient might have financial difficulty down the road, tell them to contact us now. Let us get their paperwork now, form a relationship with them now, because the worst thing that happens, and I see it every day, I saw it 4 times yesterday, is you have a family, one of them loses their job because of cancer. There's money that's not coming into the family. They get behind on bills, they rack up credit card debt, they start amassing late fees. When they come to us, they're at that point. And so we have to cover the late fees. We have to keep the light bill on, or the lights on. We have to, you know, make sure the rent's up to date, insurance, and all of these things. Oftentimes they'll have a pretty catastrophic failure with a vehicle. We've got to pay for that too. Whereas if they can get to us before that point, we can help prevent a lot of that, alleviate a lot of the stress. And you know, the important part to us as an organization is that's money we're not spending on late fees that we can spend on someone else's light bill or food. And so really that's my number one goal for this year, is getting to the patient earlier to help prevent some of that, what we call financial toxicity.
Yeah. No, it makes sense. And it really is so revealing just to hear about some of the hidden costs that come after a cancer diagnosis, because I don't think a lot of people always think about that. So it is really important, I think, what you're doing. And I am curious if, clearly it's very important to get funds to those patients as quickly as possible, as you sort of start talking about. So can you kind of share what the process is to actually get those funds and how to do it in a really quick and easy manner?
So that works in a few different ways. And I don't think that I've got it figured out yet. I just want to put that out there. We do what works for the individual. There are a lot of folks that they don't have traditional bank accounts, but what they do have is a phone. And there's Zelle, there's any number of these apps that we can utilize. Another thing that we utilize is PayPal. So we've been admitted into PayPal's giving fund. Money that comes into PayPal, we can set up a free account for people that we could just transfer money to them via PayPal. And PayPal have been a tremendous part. They really, really have. The other thing that we can do is, if someone has a broken windshield, for instance, there's a number of different companies we can call. We can pay them. They will go find the patient, whether it's at a hotel or their home or the hospital, whatever it is, replace that windshield so that they can make the safe trip home. There are a few different hotel chains that have regional and even local management and ownership. We can often pay them directly for hotel stays. I think we're at about a dozen different national property management companies that we can actually contribute to a patient's rent. Oftentimes their insurance is tied into their lease, so we can pay that as well. We did just have a really interesting conversation with Lekonda, automaker. And for loans that are originated with Honda, in other words, Honda finances these loans for vehicles, we're working out a mechanism to where if we're providing sustained support to a patient and their family, we can make direct payments to that automaker. And now, all of that may sound nice, but it's really small. We obviously would love to have a lot better mechanisms in place, but it's not easy. What I can tell you is that when we approach hotels with this idea, they're like, we've never been approached with this idea before outside of the federal government. So FEMA, for instance, or Homeland Security, et cetera, they pay hotel bills all the time. But when we communicate with these companies about paying them directly to help provide things for cancer patients, they're like, you know, we don't really know how to go about it because we've not done it before. And that's a lot of what we face, right? Nobody knows what they don't know. And so, you know, a lot of these processes are just new and we'll have to perfect them. And we're very appreciative for all of the corporations that are jumping in and saying, yeah, you know what? We like this idea. We like being part of it and we'll help. And that's been really, really huge.
I'm sure that these sorts of processes do take time, but I know that For Amanda has grown so tremendously in such a short period of time. And so what has the process of growing the organization so much and so quickly kind of been like for you?
Oh, that's a big one. So, you know, first of all, I think it's important to note, I knew nothing about philanthropy before we founded this. I knew nothing. And so I've been fortunate that there have been a number of really, really smart people that have been in philanthropy for decades that have taken me aside and just given me information that I desperately needed. One of the things that I thought was, okay, we make our case that this is what we do. This is the good that we're going to do. These are the positive things that happen in people's lives because of what we do. And if we state that case, people will give us money so that we can help people. That's not the case. The philanthropy has changed a lot. In the last 10 years, what I'm told is there's been a huge transformation shift. COVID actually pushed that a little bit further. Mm-hmm. So whereas you used to be able to go to any company in the Fortune 500 and, you know, present a document in a rather simple format that says, this is who we are, this is what we do, this is why we need your assistance, and you would get that. It's not the case now. Now, what you do and how you do it and who you help needs to be tied to a corporation's environmental and social governance. Mm-hmm. What they value is what you need to present to them. So whereas in the beginning, I would simply say, well, we help keep lights on and help keep families in their home and help feed them. Now I have to say, well, this percentage of patients that we help are women, or they're in this demographic, or they're this percentage of the poverty level, and they live in these locations. I've got to get real granular with data so that I can provide that to corporations so that their people can match what their goals are, what their values are, to what we're doing. Now, I will tell you, I've enjoyed doing it, and I don't particularly find that it's obtrusive or too time-consuming. I honestly think it provides a level of visibility to what everyone's doing within the nonprofit sector. And then the other part is people are not giving individual donations. They're not logging on and saying, here's $20. They're not doing that. They're working through their company, mm-hmm. right? Their company is part of some mechanism and they give money to an organization. And then the corporation also matches that. And I happen to see that as a positive thing because, again, I think it provides for a little bit more veracity, right? I think there's an instant air of impropriety that's removed when I go through the hoops of signing up for Candid, formerly GuideStar, and obtain that certification, put all of my data on there, and then I'm seen by everyone in the exact same way. I think there's value to that. I will tell you that there's other things that we're trying to be creative with that haven't gotten real good reception. And I'll just tell you one. Amanda was very lucky. She worked for a corporation as a complex patent paralegal. She could work wherever her computer was, and I could do the same thing. But an awful lot of cancer patients and their families, they don't fall into that category. So I was trying to think of ways where we could, A, preserve some dignity for the cancer patient, right? Allow them to work, then also give them a way to do it remotely. So I said, well, you know what we're going to do? We're going to create a Fiverr for cancer patients and their families. And it'll be a gig site that companies will, you know, hire cancer patients, their families, pay them well. And then, you know, we were going to set that up for free, manage it for free. And we actually had some good response from corporations, but we didn't have very good feedback from cancer patients. They didn't want it. And so I thought, well, okay, sometimes a great idea is a great idea later. So we'll bench that and come back to it. Then we thought, well, how about we create a social media platform that is only for cancer patients? That wasn't very popular either. They prefer to use the social media that they're already using, and that's understandable. So we shelved that. But what we did do is we were able to team up with, and I'm not quite sure I have permission to state the name, but it's a very large company that owns the vast majority of movie cinemas.
Okay. Yeah. We don't need, don't want to get in trouble for more.
Yeah. And so what we learned was, you know, an awful lot of cancer patients are traveling with their children. They don't have anything to do.
Yeah.
And so we said, well, how about we get them to a movie, you know, on us, get the transportation, get them to a movie. You know, we could tie in food or some other sort of entertainment. And that went over pretty well. And that's something we roll out in May. And then of course, education is a huge piece, because if you are traveling with children and that's occurring during the school year, children are missing school. And so we reached out to a couple different organizations. We're trying to find a way that we can do a better job of helping these children out with their education while they're somewhere for radiation or for infusion or that kind of thing. So in terms of growth, what I can say is Facebook has done us no good. Instagram has done us no good. Twitter has done us no good. Quora and LinkedIn. What I can tell you is for colorectal cancer, I am the third most read person on Quora for colorectal cancer. And there's no gimmick to it. It's simply going to Quora and answering questions and doing so honestly. And I, every time I answer someone's question, I do it the same way. I say, well, I can't tell you what the answer to your question is, but how about if I just give you what Amanda's experiences were and or what my experiences were? And just speaking to the heart like that, you know, that has really aided us in growth. I think so too, you know, because what we are dealing with is financial toxicity. We have reached out to the authors of all of the top papers on financial toxicity and said, hey, can we interview you? Can I interview you and dig deeper into your paper? Because, you know, in a peer-reviewed document, there's a lot you leave out because you have to, because it's scientific and it's peer-reviewed. And I try to draw just a little bit more of the person and the emotion and the perspective. And of course, we have no desire to be, to dive into government. So, because we're not a lobbyist group and that's not what we want to be. But in having communication with these scholars, what we've noticed is they've gone to their representatives or different industry groups. And a member from the U.S. House of Representatives reached out to me 2 weeks ago because of an interview that we did and asked for our opinion on a few different things. And then yesterday, I was invited for next month to go to a subcommittee and talk. And that terrifies me to death because I've never done that before. But I feel like maybe by not knowing what I'm doing, I've done some things to help maybe speed us along a little bit. But most of it's been by accident. It really has.
I mean, if it works.
And hopefully that'll continue. I don't want to get to a point where I think I've got this figured out, because I don't think that's possible, first of all. But I also don't want to find myself in a position where I'm not reaching for the star that's, you know, going to get us where we need to be to help more people.
And clearly so much of your work is really based on actually listening to patients and what they want. And so I'm curious if you've had any particular experiences where For Amanda has had, you know, this positive impact on either an individual person or family that you've worked with.
It's something new every day.
Yeah.
It really is. There's a young woman who has a very rare cancer. And she also has had a lifelong ailment where her body feels physical pain to a degree that is excruciating. And so she's a student and she wants to she wants to go into public relations with nonprofits when she graduates. And because her body feels pressure and pain in particular ways, she needs a nice, cushy, like gel foam mattress. And her wheelchair needs that very type of cushion in it. And, you know, she has two wheelchairs. So her vehicle is rather small. And she does have, the vehicle is equipped to place a regular wheelchair on the back, but not her heavy motorized wheelchair. So when she goes to university each day, she's wheeling herself around. And it's not a small campus. I mean, you're at Yale. Not all your classes are in the same building. Yeah. Got to do some walking. And so she had three requests. She wanted a bed. And she wanted a new mattress for her wheelchair. And she wanted to find a way where she could have the heavier wheelchair go with her to university.
Yeah.
Now, these are three really small asks. What she's asking for is not big, not fiscally speaking, nor in any other way. And the thing about it was, in her application, she said, I'm willing to volunteer however I can to pay this back. And you would, maybe you would, maybe you wouldn't be surprised. I think I was at first, and I'm not anymore. Almost every single person that asks us for help says the same thing. Tell me how I can pay this back. Tell me how I can volunteer. I know that this is a lot to ask. She literally said, I know this is a lot to ask. Well, no, actually, that's not a lot to ask. If being able to sleep without pain or sit without pain or be able to get to and from your classes without A, being late and then B, feeling more pain. Because remember, she's operating this manual wheelchair. She's feeling more pain.
Can't even imagine. You know?
That's, you know, and that one really hit me kind of hard because it was late at night. It had been a rough week. And here's this person saying, I know this is a lot to ask, but I'll pay it back. You know, that we see that all the time. The ones that are difficult are probably a month or two ago, there was a mother and father, both of their daughters had cancer. They both died. They had spent everything that they had, cashed in all their insurance, taken out loans, gone into credit card debt to try and save their babies, their two little girls, and they didn't have money to bury them. And they asked for $1,600 to cremate them. And they were going to cremate them together, which is why it was $1,600 versus $3,200. And it made me angry. Like I was angry about that. And so we made four or five calls and basically they were able to have a viewing and a funeral and a burial. Now we had to team up with, I think four other organizations really to make this happen. But you know, we were able to make that happen. I honestly can't say that made the mother and father's life any less difficult, but that was what they wanted to do and they just couldn't afford it. And so I hope in some damn small way that did something. I don't know. But you know, it's 50% being able to help people and you're able to see an outcome. You're able to see good thing. And then it's 50%. Yes, you are helping them with something financial, but the outcome is not good because there's a death. And so, you know, that's what it is on a daily basis. It's just trying to not make someone cry. I mean, it's nice if you can put a smile on someone's face, but that's not it. Two-thirds of the time, it's just trying to prevent someone from devolving into just utter tears of frustration and hopelessness.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's the right way to go about it, but it feels like that's the only way it can happen, at least at this point.
No, I'm sure. Even if, obviously, if someone's in this situation, it's understandable they're not going to be smiling and happy, but that doesn't mean that this work isn't so significant and that you aren't really creating such a positive impact on their lives. So I think even if it's not always a spoken thing, it's really incredible what you're doing. And so, of course, my last question, a very important question, is how can those who want to help you and help the organization really do so?
You know, I've come to the realization that the best support people can give is local. And you may never hear a nonprofit say this, but before you give us money so that we can help people, start local. Because what we have started doing is granting to local organizations that are able to wrap their arms around a patient. I can't do that. I can't sit with someone, hold their hand, hug them, and then help them financially, because we help people all over the country. You know, local support is so important. It's so important because I think there's some emotional attachment that comes with someone sitting with you and saying, we're going to figure this out. It'll be okay. Now, if people have room in their family's budget, we would love to help. You can visit foramanda.org. That's the number four, the numeral four, I should say, amanda.org. And if you scroll down to the bottom, you can go through PayPal Giving Fund. And then if you don't want to do that, you can also just click on the donate button. It floats along the website, no matter where you are, it's staring you in the face. You know, if you want to help out in other ways, send us a message. I'd love to have the conversation. There are a lot of things that people need, and so there are a lot of ways people can help. I unfortunately don't think that we're going to see the end of cancer in my lifetime, and Brooke, not even yours. You know, cancer presents in over 1,000 ways. So let's say you did cure skin cancer, you know, a particular melanoma, or you were successful in curing leukemia, which would be wonderful. There's still over 1,000 other presentations of cancer. And so I think, while I think that cancer research is incredible and it should not stop and you know, grow, but I think we do have to understand that the pain of cancer, the financial toxicity that can cause that pain, is something that we do need to figure out a way to address. I think we have it within our capacity as humans to help heal that pain, help prevent that toxicity. And I think that we as voters in this country can, I think, guide our elected officials to make better choices, be more humane. But there will need to be people at a local level that are charitable and help cancer patients. And I'm going to do this as long as I have to. One thing I would say, because it's a personal toot my own horn, we are $1 in, $1 out.
Amazing.
If somebody gives a dollar to ForAmanda, a dollar gets to a patient. I draw no salary. My technology company provides for our website, our app, our insurance. When I travel, that's on me. So we are $1 in, $1 out. And I would encourage anyone who's thinking about charitable giving to consider that. Now, there are very large organizations that they're not a dollar in, dollar, but they can't be. They're so big, they couldn't possibly be. But do please look at Candid and at other places, Candid, formerly GuideStar, and figure out just how much financial impact your dollar is making. My commitment has been from the beginning, we will never pay salaries. One of my companies will pay for those so that every dollar in goes to a cancer patient. And if you're at the local level, you have that power. at your local level, you have that power. You can say, well, my $20, my $50 is going to go directly to someone that needs it. You can do that. Anyone can at their local level. And I think that's really, really important.
Thank you so much for coming on today. And I think a lot of people will really benefit from hearing about this cause and hopefully getting involved.
Well, Brooke, I'm impressed by you and what you're doing. I hope this makes it into the final cut. You started doing this in high school, and now you're at Yale, and you're doing it for a very, very good reason. And I am rarely impressed by people of your age, but you are going to do something amazing in this world. And I don't know what it will be, but you're exactly the type of human being that we need more of.
Thank you.
And I appreciate what you're doing.
Thank you.